The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
I am the man, sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram, stunt me, you're destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam, put some respect on my name. Sick like Obane, click and I bang, y'all gon' remember the name. Y'all gon' remember the name.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to another episode of the Real Talk with Zuby podcast. Now, on today's episode, we have got on a three-way conversation. I've got on Carrie Hathorn and Belissa Cohen from the group LGB Fight Back, and we're going to be having a really interesting discussion today. So welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having us on today, Zuby. This is great.
Awesome. So I've done a very brief intro there, but for people who are not familiar with who you are, why don't you tell them a little bit about you?
Awesome. So we are a multi-generational grassroots organization composed of lesbians, bisexuals, and gay men. And we promote radical self-acceptance and self-love for all homosexuals and bisexual men and women. And LGB Fight Back advocates for the interests of the LGB community. And in order to advocate for our population, we're fighting back against the T.
Oh, okay. That is controversial. So the first thing people are going to note is the absence of the T. So what is the thinking and reasoning behind that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, just to give a little backstory on this, you know, as far as we can tell, we're not even clear how the T got added in the first place. We've been, you know, doing our own research to figure this out. But we don't think there was any big gay meeting that said, hey, let's add this T thing onto a movement about sexuality and same-sex rights. And so there, as far as we can tell, this never happened. This never occurred. And so our analysis is that the T as a political movement, transgenderism as a political movement, piggybacked onto our movement, the gay and lesbian rights movement, or the LGB movement, which was coined in the 90s. The B was out in the 90s, which makes perfect sense because the B is about sexuality, just like the L and the G, right? Okay, but this T, what is going on there? So we, our view is that the transgenderism promotes bad ideas, you know, the bad idea that you can, it's possible to change sex, and which it's not, of course. But it's been quite an appealing concept. It's quite seductive, actually, to, gay people in some ways, because it's a way for them to appear straight. It's a way for a lesbian to look like a straight man. Or, right? And so rather than praying the gay away, we would say that they're transing the gay away. And so what this movement did, this political movement with its own clear agenda, very different from ours, was to create essentially a customer base, which meant that there was, you know, a base of people who wanted medical services and products, such as artificial or manufactured hormones or, you know, lots of different kinds of plastic surgery, cosmetic surgery, right? And so this was about money and business. It was a business endeavor that, you know, went after our population essentially. And so, you know, when we're talking about business, it's like we know that there's businesses that promote the well-being of society, that provide services that are good for people, that help society run, right? They're beneficial. And then there's businesses that we would say are rather parasitic, that are rather harmful, and that aren't really interested in the benefit of the population or society. And so we think this is a huge, huge medical scandal in the making. You know, and the reality is that LGBT people, we don't need medicalization. We don't need medical intervention. You know, we're fine just the way we are. And so the T movement, you know, we think that, you know, they did target our community for what we would call medical gay conversion therapy. And the reality is in today and this time period, they're not only coming for us, but now they're coming for everybody's kids.
Okay. There's a lot there. Do you have anything to add to that thought there, Belissa?
Well, we think that the way the T was added is kind of goes along with the concept of forced teaming, where one group or person implies to another group or person that they have shared interests or goals or a predicament. And that was, you know, not just to our movement, but to the world at large, implied that we all are the same. And that is not the case. And we're trying to explain to people why the fight for LGBT rights is not the same as promoting the idea that it's possible to change sex and medicalizing a great number of people in order to do this for corporate interest.
It's interesting. I mean, I've made the point for many years that the T is a strange part of that acronym, because the first three are clearly about sexuality, right? Who people are attracted to. And the T is something different, you know, in a crude way. I've said, you know, it's, someone likes dogs, someone likes cats and dogs. And then someone is saying that the cat is actually a dog, or the dog is actually a cat. And things that are more complicated with that. Bit of a crude example, but it is something that's different there. So in terms of your own story and journey, what led you to think, okay, we need to create a group, an organization, a movement of people who are LGBT, so who are part of this community, but we want to take a stand and exclude actually the T part of the equation? Because it's certainly the case that over the last, let's say, 5 to 7 years, the T has really been the thing that's getting the hype, the shine. That's what everyone's talking about. It seems to be the popular thing, etc. So what was the moment that made you think, we need to speak up here?
Well, I don't think there was like a moment necessarily. I mean, I think that a lot of people from the LGBT population have been really, really brainwashed into the trans ideology, overwhelmingly so, especially anybody under 40. So that includes myself. So, you know, I was swimming along with this stuff for a good long while, at least 10 years, you know, potentially 20 years of indoctrination, really. And so I think for me, it was like looking at the long term, how this has played out long term, and how we've seen more and more people from our community go down this path with not so great results. Didn't really see the benefit of all of this, you know? Mm-hmm. And, I mean, both speak to this too, but we've seen it, in our own, you know, social groups, in lots of different ways over the years. And the movement has definitely, you know, changed and become a bit, the transgenderist movement has changed their narrative. You know, it's like the snake chasing its tail kind of thing. You know, it's like, it's a very circular argument. It's very illogical. It doesn't make any sense. But now the point that we can see a whole group of young people, of teenagers who are being, you know, kind of inundated with these ideas through social media and even through the school system, and huge numbers of young people now wanting to medicalize their bodies, and it results in sterilization. Mm-hmm. So we're concerned, and you know, we worked with a parent group on Valentine's Day to do protests, and we protested outside of 4 gender clinics in the U.S. and Canada. So you know, we are seeing the impact of this, and it's really extreme.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Go ahead, Belissa.
And I would say that the way that the T has been framed, this medicalization to pretend that it's possible to be the opposite sex, has been framed as gay 2.0, gay plus, just another way to be gay, when in effect, it is the antithesis of that. It's saying that rather than be gay, why don't you trans the gay away and pretend to be a fake straight person? So the perception of what the public has been sold is very different than the effects on LGB people. And it's creating havoc in LGB communities for a number of reasons, which is why we really saw that there was a need to promote what we say radical self-acceptance and self-love for LGB people, because we saw that without that, we're prey for anybody who can say you can opt out of this and possibly, which really doesn't work, or you can pretend to be straight, which really doesn't work. You end up with just a person with cosmetic surgery having same-sex relationships. And, you know, they're medicalized and it has devastating effects on their bodies and shortens their lives. And it's not self-actualization. Self-actualization does not come at the end of a scalpel or in the plastic surgeon's office. That's not where self-actualization is going to come for anybody, especially LGB people. So that's why we really saw a need for an LGB organization for people who are same-sex attracted.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I think the attachment of the T is simply largely a socio-political strategy, because what happens, especially, if one of us super straight people makes any sort of criticism of any part of transgender ideology, shall we say, then it's lumped as an attack on the LGBT community, right? As if every gay, bi, lesbian, trans person, you know, like it's just this big lump group and they all have the same ideas and they all agree on everything. And I know for a fact that that's not the case. Having this conversation, that's clearly not the case. And what's interesting is that, you know, I was talking about the difference between those first three letters and the fourth. I think also it's the fourth one is ideological, right? So if a man is attracted to men, that's one thing. A woman is attracted to women. A man or woman's attracted to both. Like that's just a fact, right? Like that's just, okay, that's what it is. But transgenderism in the way it's presented today is very much ideologically based, right? It's very much an ideology. It's completely changing the notion of sex and gender and creating a differentiation between them, changing the whole concept of what the word man means, what the word woman means, what the word boy and girl means, what male and female mean, etc. And it's closer to a sort of secular religion and a dogma, which you're just supposed to go along with and not ask any questions about. And then, of course, on top of it, you've now got people saying that they're non-binary or they're inventing new genders and there's this and there's that. And I think that by lumping them all together under this LGBT umbrella, it sort of makes it hard for people to talk about it without sort of people trying to say, oh, you're just attacking all of these people, or you've got a problem with all of this or whatever. And you're trying to deny people's existence and deny reality and erase people's identities and all were, you know, these very, what's the word? Extreme assumptions that are made. It's very, very, very exaggerated. And there's a very severe overreaction, which again, I think is more of a tactic and a strategy than it is how people genuinely, feel and view this.
Well, yeah. And because it's a tactic and a strategy being pushed on the rest of the world, with a lot of money behind it and a lot of people who are paid to promote this ideology, let alone the foot soldiers that were created when the LGB community was kind of brainwashed and seduced into these bad ideas. You know, there's so much virtue signaling about adopting these ideas and this compelled speech. And, women especially are losing their jobs. people are being deplatformed. These bad ideas are really kind of awash in our community. And it is a strategy. It is really this idea that, you know, there's just so much money behind it, pushing these ideas that, everybody thinks that they can't say that the emperor has no clothes. They have to say that the emperor is wearing a full party dress, you know, and that is really not the case. And there's really, we've got to make it okay for people to stand up and say these truths. And that's one of the goals of LGB Fight Back is to say to people like you, the super straights, Zuby, that, you know, we're allied with the super straights, the super lesbians, the super gays and the super bis are aligned with the super straights. And, that sex is real and that, homosexuality and heterosexuality are both based on sexual attraction, not same gender attraction. And it's been redefined in the dictionary. So, we want to make people understand that that the LGBTQI++, as they're adding, is, like you said, an ideology, not based on material reality or biological fact. And that straight people, the super straights, do not have to go along with this to avoid risk being called bigots.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was part of what we understood needed to happen was that if LGBT people came out and said, whoa, like, the world's gone mad. And, you know, we can speak to that and say how it's gone mad. And we're like the canaries in the coal mine here that have been dealing with this stuff for decades, like literally like at least 20 plus years. This stuff has been permeating in our culture. And so when Melissa mentioned the foot soldier bit, you know, that's really true about how when these bad ideas were introduced in the community, people adopted those ideas. And then they disseminated those ideas, right? And so that's why you get that hardcore reaction from people being like, oh my God, you're against the LGBTQ plus I boob it, whatever, you know? And it's like, it's because they're indoctrinated. There really is an indoctrination to this, you know? And so, but the thing is that when we look at the history of like, well, how the heck did this even happen, right? One of the things that we've realized is that, you know, our organizations, the LGB organizations were taken over. I mean, I guess in the UK, I mean, Stonewall is a clear case example of that, but we have like 200 plus organizations in the United States, community centers, different kinds of organizations. Yeah. And so our organizations were taken over, and the way that they were taken over wasn't simply through an ideology, but it was through the funding, because we're talking about some of these activist billionaires who are promoting these ideas that want these ideas to come out, as you said, a bigger strategy. Well, who came up with that strategy? We've got some ideas, you know? And so we have a sense of who some of these men are actually who have promoted these ideas. But what did they do? They created, foundations that then would donate to LGB organizations. Strings attached, T attached. So we've seen the funding that, you know, we used to get, you know, there's charts actually that show the funding that goes for lesbian stuff and the funding that goes for bisexual stuff and the funding that goes for gay men, right? And then now the T is like this much of the funding.
I'm feeling left out. I want some funding.
Well, so do we, frankly. Our grassroots here, like, volunteer effort trying to like bring down this like monster Trojan T political movement, right? Throw us a bone, you know, but really it's like they did it through funding. So they put funding, they funded our orgs and took them over. Mm. That's how we got what we call LGBT Inc.
And what do you think is the goal there?
Well, we see the goal. It's really, about a corporate vision for, mass profit, which is there are these activist billionaires who are massively invested in medical technology and big pharma, which is the biggest lobby in the U.S. is the medical lobby. I don't know if you're aware, but because we don't have a national health system. And, you know, it's not saying that's better or worse. And we're not saying that all profit is bad. because as Carrie said, you know, there's businesses that promote health and well-being and businesses like the idea that you can medicalize people to pretend to be the opposite sex, especially children, which we don't think is promoting health in society or, you know, possibly creating a lot of issues down the road. But, there's these active civilians who have kind of escaped. Some of them are, men who perceive themselves to be women, and, they take the money from some of this, medical profit and put it into their foundation. And then they take the foundation money and they see transgenderist causes all over the world, and especially in the U.S. Like one of them is called Arcus Foundation, which funds the ACLU, which is, you know, very powerful in changing laws, and National Public Radio, NPR, just for a few. They give money to universities to chair programs in transgender studies. And so, you know, there's different tentacles which promote these bad ideas in all areas, media. You know, there's a lot of things going on. And, you know, promoting health is a really good thing for medical corporations to do, and educating people on how to be more healthy. But we don't think that this is a really positive or progressive thing to promote, the idea that you should put children on drugs starting very young and create a medical patient for life. We have heard that each child that is put on these drugs like puberty blockers and wrong sex manufactured hormones is a $1 million client for these, this ideology for profit. Mm-hmm. So what's really the point of this needless medicalization of perfectly healthy children and vulnerable adults? We just don't see that perfectly healthy children need to become lifelong medical patients so that a massive corporation could make $1 million.
Yeah. Stuff involving children is very, very, very disturbing. Very disturbing, especially when you consider what the longer term implications may be. I think we live in a society where a lot of people do not think past first order consequences. They don't think of the second, third, fourth order consequences, right? So if a child, the biggest question to me is, okay, if you're talking to one of these people who I'd say are bonkers, who thinks that a child, a minor, should be able to make such decisions, then the obvious question that comes to me is, okay, well, if a child can consent to that, what else can a child consent to? Right? That's opening a gigantic, very uncomfortable Pandora's box. If someone is telling me that a 5-year-old is, you know, why don't we let 5-year-olds drive? Why don't we let them vote? Why don't we let them get tattoos? Why don't we let them do, right? The obvious answer is because we recognize that adults and children are different. They have different brain capacities. Your brain's not fully developed until you're even 25. I mean, if anything, 18 might not even really be a full adult yet. So when people are pushing these ideas, I'm just like, oh my gosh, like what are you, how have we gotten here? Like, how is that considered, whether you're progressive or liberal or conservative, whatever, I'm like, this shouldn't even matter, right? It should just be a no. Like when you're talking children, adults, okay, you know, whether or not someone agrees with your ideology or they think it makes sense or they think it's good or bad or whatever, I think most people are kind of like, if that's what someone wants to do, and they're a mature adult, okay, that's their choice. Like, I might not like it, I might not approve, I might think it's weird, whatever, but if that's what they want to do, fair enough. But if you're talking about children, and the way that has become this sort of trendy thing now, it seems, when you're seeing these parents coming out in the UK and Canada and USA, and they're like, oh, I'm the proud parent of a 3-year-old trans kid. And I'm just like, what are you talking about? That's like having a vegan dog, right? Like, we know who's making the decisions here.
One thing that we really want your audience to understand, Zuby, is that when these kids who are non-conforming to sex-based stereotypes, which are the kids who seem to get caught up in this medicalization by their parents, which is, you know, boys who want to wear purple, sparkly things or like mermaids or...
There's nothing wrong with men liking purple.
There is not. And
I love a man in pink too. Let's just
please.
Well, I don't know about pink, but purple.
Some men look great as pink. Are you serious?
Pink shirts. Yeah, pink collared shirts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
there you go.
Color doesn't have a gender, guys. Come on. Let's liberate the colors from this construct.
Yeah, you know, it's like, and you know, back in the day, girls weren't supposed to wear pants, you know, and so little, you know, it's just right. Times, it's always just, you know, it's just fashion. So, but little girls who might hate frilly dresses and, you know, want a short haircut.
They're obviously boys.
Obviously, aren't they? So, you know, that's a good reason to put them on strong drugs for the rest of their lives because they like short hair.
It blows my mind that it's a as we're having it blows my mind that this is even like a conversation topic. I mean, even it's crazy because I think even 10 years ago, if you told people like, okay, this is where things are going to be in 2021, they'd just go, what are you talking about? Like, no, come on, that's silly. And now you're just seeing it. And it's, I mean, you've both been talking about the funding behind it, but it's so obvious that it's funded. It's obvious that there is an agenda. And that this is really being pushed in schools, in yes. universities, cartoons, television, on Netflix, on social media, etc. I'm just like, man, this is weird. This is just weird.
Massive wave of propaganda. But one thing that I always like to point out is like 20 years ago, if you had a kid who wanted to play with different identities or say this or that, you would just say, oh, well, you know, that's whatever. It's just child's play. But now there's this push to take whatever kids say as being like a very super important thing to listen to. And you have to, you know, affirm everything that a little tiny itsy bitsy kid says on through. So these kids are not being allowed to just play and grow up and take on identities as kids do. That's why they're getting locked into these. We didn't have medicalization 20 years ago. Now it's the option. So let's use it. And I think there's the issue with parents, either virtue signaling or some say it's a Munchausen's situation or just trying to, you know, not be seen as bigots in a weird way or homophobia. They would rather have a fake straight kid than a gay kid. There's issues of that. But, we want to say that these kids who don't conform to what we consider sex-based stereotypes, girls wearing frilly dresses, boys playing with trucks, if they divert, the kids who don't do that, we don't want to sexualize kids. Kids do not have a sexuality, but these kids very often, studies have shown, if not affirmed as the opposite sex as children, they grow up and desist around the end of puberty and become gay and lesbian. The great majority of them are gays, lesbians, and bisexuals. Not all of them. Some of them are straight. But so in that way, they're transing the next generation of LGBT people. So that is a lot of why LGBT Fight Back has a dog in this fight, is because if you trans the next generation of our communities, like, who is going to make gay culture? Who is going to write gay theater? Who is going to be there for us to mentor and to, you know, help us get old? You know, we need to keep this generation, you know, intact and not medicalize them and get them to seduce them the idea that they can pretend to be the opposite sex so that there are healthy, happy gay people for years to come. We need fashion. We need engineers. We need you know, musicians, we need these people who have always created culture in the world.
Yeah. I mean, I think the other thing is like what we're seeing is like this tidal wave of teenagers. Melissa, can you mute? Cause we get the background. Yeah. We get this tidal wave of teenagers right now who have been really seduced by these ideas. So, it's not just going to be gay kids. These aren't just, and when we say gay kids, okay, let's clarify this because we got some pushback for putting on our signs, like, stop transing gay kids. Well, first of all, we were working with a parent organization, okay, those are their kids that they were talking about. Don't trans our kids. And, you know, we're not talking about, you know, prepubescent children when we're talking, you know, there's children, prepubescent children, which they put on puberty blockers that then have they're sterilized. They're going to be sterilized. They have lifelong health consequences. If you don't go through puberty, you don't develop normally. Your brain doesn't develop right. Like, there's so many problems with this. Okay. It's not just about genitals. This is way beyond the endocrine system, the hormones that you need to develop into a healthy adult. Right. So those are children. When we're talking about kids, overwhelmingly what we're talking about is teenagers because they're minors. They are minors. And once you go through puberty or as you're going through puberty, that's, you know, such an important, you know, and kids do have a sexuality in puberty. They are developing a sexuality. Like, a lot of teenagers know who they're attracted to. I mean, this is not like, you remember back to when you were 13, 14, 15, like you had a sexuality. Okay.
Yeah.
So people develop sexualities when they're going through puberty. So that's what we're talking about. And so these were parents saying, stop transing gay kids. They're talking about their own freaking kids. Okay. Just for clarity's sake here. Right. But the thing is that what we've seen, and, you know, having talked to lots and lots of parents, is that a lot of these kids start to identify as trans right around the age of puberty, the beginning, the onset, 11, 12, is really common. And what I think is going on here is that, well, what do you happens in puberty? It's freaking uncomfortable. Your body is, you're changing from this like non-sex being to a sex being. And there's so much discomfort that happens with that. And so some of the, creepy grossness of this transgenderist movement is like telling children, these edging into puberty children, right? That it's like they're selling them this idea that because you're uncomfortable, it must mean because you're not actually a girl, you must be a boy. Mm-hmm. It's not because you're a boy, it's because you're a girl. That's why you're uncomfortable. So essentially, they've medicalized, in a sense, they're medicalizing puberty. They're telling kids, what's wrong with you isn't that you're going through puberty. It's that you're really the opposite sex. And you get to choose. You get to choose which sex you're going to grow up to be. Like, how mm-hmm. big of a fantasy is that?
Or you could be neither, or you can make up your own.
Well, that too.
Yeah.
You could just, yeah.
It's interesting. I mean, another thing that's really interesting about it all is that somewhat to what you've alluded to already is that there is also a sort of homophobic element to it all, right? Where you're sort of saying, oh, this girl likes trucks. Oh, she's obviously a boy, right? Or, this boy likes, it's weird. It's simultaneously, it's got like sexist elements and homophobic elements actually in it, in itself. Or you're saying, oh, this boy, he's playing with his sister's Barbie. That means he's actually a girl and we need to put him on some chemicals or like, you know, do something to his body or whatever. And it's just like on multiple levels, it's just like, what is going on here? And then I think the scarier part for a lot of people is, I think this is just a topic that is, it's considered so taboo, right? Unless your position is just like, yeah, it's great. Let's just roll with this all. Let's do this. Let's trans everyone. Let's invent infinite new genders. Let's throw pronouns everywhere. Let's just make up our own fantasy land. If that is not your position, then, and it's not most people's positions, by the way, like vast majority of people are not on board with any of this, but it's very few people who are willing to say, no, we're not doing that. And when you're seeing, obviously, something that brought me to fame was, of course, me breaking the British women's deadlift record after identifying as a woman to highlight the absurdity of some of the stuff that's being pushed. So obviously, women's sport has been, one of the big sort of battlegrounds for this. And it blows my mind that this is even, again, it blows my mind that this is a conversation, right? You're just thinking, what is going on here? It's so ideologically driven and so anti-science and so anti-common sense, right? Just this notion that, oh, like any man should, can just say that they're a woman and boom, they're a woman. And not only that, but we must also allow this person now to compete in biological women's pro sports. You're just like, oh, it's just layers of stupidity and cowardice. Actually, I think it's cool what you're both doing with this, because it's, I think it's one of those issues that it's very much been framed on this political line. It's almost been framed as if it's like straight versus LGBT as a whole, or it's conservative versus liberal. You know, it's just these mean conservatives don't want people to live their lives, and they don't want it. And it's just like, this should not be a conservative battleground. This is just like common sense. I'm not seeing a lot of people out there saying, oh, you know, we want to be hurting people, or we want certain people to be discriminated against, or we want people to be, you know, live rough lives. No, barely anybody is saying that or promoting that. Most people are very much live and let live, at least in the Western world. But I think with all of this stuff, if anything, I think it's actually creating more animosity and tension, perhaps, that otherwise wouldn't be there, right? Like let's be real, trans people are very rare. Most people don't know anyone who's even trans. But when people start seeing these issues coming where you're seeing biological males competing in female sports, then that's something that flags up as a red flag for a lot of people. And they're like, wait, what the heck is going on? When they're starting to push surgeries and hormone blockers on children, people are like, wait, what's going on? And it makes people go, oh, okay, like, you know, people paint with broad brushes sometimes, and it can easily make them go, okay, all these people are just crazy. And I think even the trans people that I have spoken to, the people who I do know, because I have a very big audience, so I know people of all sorts, they're not on board with it either. They're just like, no, I just want to be left alone. I don't want to be hurt or attacked or to be discriminated against, but this sports thing is silly. Like, this is a bad idea. And this whole thing with children is stupid and it's dangerous. Like, they're generally on board with that. But there are just these activists who, most of them are not even transgender. Most of them are not even trans, but they're just the ones who are sort of speaking on behalf of the movement and for everybody else. And I don't know. It's pretty crazy, but it's really interesting to see some pushback coming from within the so-called community, which I know isn't really a community.
Well, one thing we like to say is that there really isn't so much left or right anymore on this issue. There's just common sense. And, you know, this has, in our country at least, has been framed as the Republicans are against these poor, oppressed people, mm-hmm. and the left is pro these poor, oppressed people. And, you know, the coverage is completely fake, I would say. Fake coverage. The framing of this issue is fake. It's not at all true. There's many progressives, especially women, who see this movement for what it is, the transgenderist movement. And there are many Republicans who maybe aren't so victim of compelled speech, that they are maybe a little bit freer to speak up. And that's why you hear more Republicans. But
meet yourself, B. I mean, there's, like you said, so much there, Zuby, that we could speak to. You know, there's a lot to unpack on that one. But you know, I think when you mentioned starting off about how this movement is, you could see signs of how it's like homophobic or it's anti-gay, and it certainly is, because you know, we would argue that trying to trans the gay away is absolutely medical conversion therapy, right? I mean, that is extreme medical conversion therapy, right? Like, trying to change your body to appear as the opposite sex, is, you know, that's like making people look straight in the streets, kind of, right? But not in the sheets. He'd also, right? I mean, we're going to know when it comes down to the sheets, like people are going to know what's up, right? So, I mean, but it is absolutely homophobic. I mean, it's absolutely homophobic. We call it, woke homophobia, because it's so woke, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's true that the woke mob, you know, is mostly coming from liberals. That is absolutely true. But that's, you know, there's a problem, I think, here. If the left can't understand biological reality and material reality, and they think that drugging kids up and chopping up body parts is a progressive good thing. I mean, what the heck has happened here? Like, what is going on? Like, right? I mean, so we really want to kind of give like a ding the bell for these people who think this is a good idea, because this is not a good idea. And we've seen it play out inside of our communities for the last 20 years. And even to the point about, you know, trans people, what is that exactly? Who gets to qualify for that? And I think that was part of your point, I think, when you did the deadlifting, right? So, mm-hmm. but, you know, it's a big question that needs to really be answered, in the sense that, we don't think that, you know, there's men and there's women, there's males and females. Homosexuality is defined by same sex attraction. We have to be clear, right? All sexuality, heterosexuality, opposite sex attraction. I mean, this is like basics when it comes to like human experiences in the world.
Do you know the thing that it's not even unique to humans? It's the whole animal kingdom. That's the crazy part. It's like, okay, well, where are the trans frogs and gorillas? And, you know, there's male and female in every species. And what blows my mind as well is, you know, with a lot of liberals and progressives, is they very much claim to be the pro-science side, right? They'll say, oh, those right-wingers are anti-science, and they're, you know, they're denying science and whatever, they're science denier. And then 2 seconds later, they're talking about how men can menstruate and women can have penises and all of this stuff. And I'm just like, what? You know, like, look, if someone wants to, like I said, if someone is a grown adult and they've made a certain decision and they want to live or present themselves in a certain way, you know, if that's what you want to do, whatever. Certainly from like a legal perspective, social perspective, I'm like, look, whatever, man. Like, don't hurt people, and people aren't really, very few people will bother you. And if people are bothering you, then any decent person, whether they're conservative, liberal, whatever, will stick up for you, right? It's just that we have to acknowledge reality. If we can't acknowledge reality, or people are being forced or compelled to alter language, alter reality, and live in what is essentially a delusion, then that's a really dangerous place for a society to be.
Well, one thing that I would like to point out is that the idea that medicalizing yourself, amputating your genitals, becoming a lifelong medical patient, creating massive health issues in every system of your body, and possibly shortening your life. The idea that that is a good idea for some people, and some people benefit from this, is not true. It's not an inherent thing that is true about transgenderism, that it helps some people. Maybe it's a strategy that some people use to avoid dealing with, you know, something that they want to avoid dealing with, but it's so devastating to everybody who does this. And these people that are true trans, who really, really are, you know, great examples of transgenderism working, like, they're primarily homosexuals. The people that have extreme plastic surgery, body modification to pass as the opposite sex, and everybody says, oh yeah, you're really trans, you really are the opposite sex, and or whatever, a good approximation of the opposite sex, so well that we'll accept you and we'll use opposite sex pronouns for you, and we'll, you know, give you a platform to talk about how great it is that you know, this is good for some people but bad for children. Mm. We those are homosexuals, not the heterosexuals that everybody complains about that are, you know, LARPing in women's bathrooms or whatever. So this is harming our community, the LGB community, when people, especially straight people, think that this is stunning and brave, that somebody's done a complete body modification. They no longer have genitals, or they have artificially created, you know, parts, breast implants, whatever. You're hurting homosexuals by saying that you were so imperfectly a man or so imperfectly a woman that, yes, you really were right to opt out of biological reality into this delusional landscape where people are going to confirm your delusion by using wrong sex pronouns for you and, you know, saying, oh, but you're the real kind, not those other LARPers. So, we just want to say that like this is harmful. This is harmful even for people who pass. They have massive medical problems. We're not talking about the social problems. That's a separate issue. We're talking about the shortened lives, the cost.
When you say shortened lives, you've mentioned that a few times. Why does it shorten one's life? I'm not familiar with that.
Well, the testosterone that women take, first of all, create osteoporosis in young women, the puberty blockers in wrong sex hormones. And young women are getting severe osteoporosis, something that's not supposed to happen till your 50s or later. After 5 years on testosterone, you have to have your uterus removed. It causes vaginal atrophy. It's very hard on the body not only to not have the hormones that all your cells are programmed to get for function. Sex hormones they're called sex hormones, but they don't just affect sex. They affect your brain, they affect your bones, your muscles. So if a man isn't getting testosterone or a woman isn't getting estrogen, the body deteriorates. This is really not okay. And that's why people who don't want to be perceived as the opposite sex often have to take supplemental hormones just to keep their body processes functioning. Gotcha. And beyond that, we've looked at the market research for, you know, transgenderist surgeries and medical procedures. And it looks like down the road, they're expecting a lot of medical issues that they don't even totally know because so much of this is experimental. But in terms of cancers, in terms of their heart issues for women who take testosterone, they have very bad coronary issues. And we already know that adult women who take hormone replacement therapy, estrogen after menopause, that used to be a good idea. Now it is not allowed because these postmenopausal women on estrogen develop cancer. Well, what about these men and boys who take estrogen starting from their teens or 20s, all those decades of estrogen? It's okay for a man to take wrong sex hormones, but a woman can't take right sex hormones? Like, of course, this stuff is not being really talked about. So the implications are way bigger than anybody even has the information to discuss, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. And the other thing, like, so that's the medical side, that it's not good for people to do this to their bodies. This is so experimental, you know, and so it and toxic, essentially. And also, to mention suicide rates, like this population has a very, very high suicide rate, and that's whether or not they medicalize. So there's something going on there, you know, so like, therapy. Hello. Can we do something to help people heal? Rather than, oh, sure, you just need a script. Just go on tea. Just go on estrogen, right? Like, this is not right. This is really not right. So, but the medical stuff aside, right, the social impact also is a big deal for us as a population, and for LGB people who are doing this, because the way that these ideas have permeated, and even when we, if we say, you know, oh, that trans person, or we're using the wrong, you know, the wrong sex hormone, wrong sexed pronouns, the way that this ideology operates is it needs conspirators. It needs other people to go along with these bad ideas to feed it and to keep it in place. So anytime we affirm these bad ideas in any way by calling a man a woman or vice versa, or right, anytime we do that, that feeds it. It feeds the delusion. It feeds it for that individual, but it also feeds it for society and in the culture. And one of the things that's been recently studied among teenagers, and I think if we think about how when you're a teen, like, people are looking to their peers primarily for influence, right? And so we know that there's like what they're calling a social contagion, that this transgenderism bit is now a social contagion. And with social media, it's like way beyond like the social forces that are moving kids this direction than when I was a kid, right? Because we didn't have social media. So the influences are great. And so we see that the social contagion bit is like whole groups of girls, yes, for example, will do this now.
And girls are more susceptible to it, right?
Yeah, at this moment, it's interesting because in the past, like 10 years ago, it was more 10, 20, 30 years, it was more men who were doing this. And now the biggest group is teenage girls.
I think that's because of the social contagion factor, because teenage girls are generally, you know, teenage boys can be influenced as well, but just due to the very differences of male and female, females are more likely to be influenced by that kind of thing. Similar, whether, even if it's same with anorexia or something like that, or even just basic fashion, just clothing. Girls, women are just more, you know, more social in that sense of like, okay, let me fit in with this group or tribe and see what these other girls or women are doing, and I'm going to go with that. Whereas boys tend to be a little more, just different. We're just wired differently.
Right. So anytime we play along with these ideas in any way, shape, or form, that reinforces the social aspect of this, which means that more people will think it's a good idea, more people will move toward it, more people will medicalize, and more people will get sick. I mean, this we take healthy people and we turn them to be ill. That's what this does. Yeah. You know, but it also erodes the social fabric of society. I mean, I think that's one of the big issues here. Like, what is this big strategy behind? What is really the goal of this thing? Like, it's so destabilizing to go around pretending that a man is a woman. Mm-hmm. It's incredibly destabilizing. And look what it's doing to kids in this younger generation. I mean, it's all around. Like, we just have to say, like, no, full stop. No, not, there's no such thing as trans people. What is that? What is this? The new, do we just create like a new category of human? Like, I'm sorry, like, what? Like, Melissa, I mean, maybe you have something to say about that.
Well, yeah, are we creating new categories of people, like trans people, non-binary people? Like, well, what about people who tattoo themselves green from head to toe and to give the appearance of scales and like have their ears removed and split their tongue so that they appear to be lizards, and that they want people to claim that, like, go along with their ideation that they're lizards? And, you know, what about people who file their teeth pointy? Are they now pointy tooth people? Or, you know, what kind of extreme body modification are we going to accept to, you know, create other avenues of difference when we're all biologically male or female? And, you know, what kind of compelled speech are we going to create to acknowledge new forms of people? I mean, I know it sounds ridiculous because it's become so accepted that we call a man she, or we call a woman he and her.
I don't think it's become that accepted. That's the thing. I think this is happening with a lot of things, is the media and the power of mainstream media and social media. They can make it seem like an idea is way more popular than it actually is, or that a certain population is way bigger or has a certain way of thinking that doesn't actually represent reality. They do this on different lines. They love doing it across, you know, gender lines, sexuality lines, racial lines. They love making it seem, oh, all black people think like this. All gay people think like this. All, you know, these people, all white people think like this. All women think like this. All men think like this. And whenever you do that, you're going to be wrong because people are just individuals, which is one reason why I've always thought, I mean, from the past 20 years, I've always thought the term LGBT community is stupid, right? Because it's just a political tool, because I'm like, that's not a community, right? Like they're not all, I mean, was it Dave Chappelle who even made a joke about this? It's like, there are, firstly, everyone is just an individual, right? Just knowing who someone is attracted to does not tell you much about them. Just like knowing somebody's skin color doesn't tell you much about them, or knowing how tall somebody is doesn't tell you much about them, etc. And it's like they just lump this whole thing together, and then they'll have certain groups and spokespeople acting as if they're speaking on behalf of the LGBT community, or someone who's speaking on behalf of the black community. And it's like, oh, well, when did 1 billion of us vote for you, right? Like, when did all the black people in the world just be like, okay, this guy is our representative. He speaks for all of us. And it's just like, you know, what is going on here? But there's something you said earlier, Carrie, which I'm kind of interested to know. You were talking about, you've seen over the past 2 decades how this has sort of crept into the community. So can you speak a little bit more about what that's looked like? Because that's something I, for obvious reasons, don't have like vision of. So how have you seen that rise up?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think Melissa has her experience too. And also just to clarify, like, we are the spokespeople for LGBT Fight Back, but we have a larger group of us that, so we're representing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Just to clarify for people, like, it's not just me and Melissa's show. It's not as much as we like it to be, but it's not. So, so I think the way, and I think that we can see generationally, that's one reason why when we say we're a multi-generational organization, that's really significant, because we've seen for multiple generations now how the T has crept in and how it's operated inside of the community. And I know when you say community, the reality is, I think for gay, lesbian, and bisexual people, is that we have historically built communities, and yeah, that is all over the country, all over the world, in different places, in different cities. Like, so it's true, there's more like little mini communities all over the place. That is really how it works. And that really has been our experience, I think, for most of us, especially, you know, at our age group and up. So, because it was kind of like, there was so much homophobia that, you know, people were kicked out of their families, and we had to figure out how to find each other and create some kind of semblance of community and support. So that is a real thing. And that is why we say that. But I think inside the community, how we've seen this play out. So, for example, in the mid 2000s was when I met, you know, the first lesbian pretending to be a straight man, and was hearing about, you know, the medicalization piece of this. And so what it looks like on the ground is you have a group of lesbians, because gay and lesbian communities are really divided by sex. You know, that's really how it works, unless we're going to do an event or go to the club or something, right? But it's pretty much women and men. That's how it works. So in the lesbian community, all of a sudden now you've got a lesbian who now is appearing to look like a man. So it's pretty obvious for us when this happens. And then it's kind of like, and so there's, you know, one here, and then a couple years later, oh, there's another one, and then here's another one, and now here's another one, and like, right? And so now, with the younger generation, I'd say like 20 to 30, for example, these ideas are so forceful, so prominent, that for a lesbian to say, I'm not interested in, let's say, a man pretending to be a woman.
Okay.
She is now called a bigot. She's being told she has genital preferences.
Oh, yes. Yes. They do this. They're trying to do this to straight people too, but.
But they've been doing it to us for 20 years. They've been doing it to us for at least 20 years. Okay. So we've seen this on the ground. Like, we're the canaries in the coal mine here, going, here's what's coming, guys, straight people. Hello, here's what's coming. Like, I mean, really, we're blowing the whistle here. I mean, this is what it is. So we're literally, we have this hardcore homophobia being launched at lesbians and gay men who are like, no, I'm just same sex attracted. Like, I don't care what you do, plastic surgery wise and hormone wise. Like, we know what you are. You're, right?
There's something about it that is hilarious. Like,
okay, good. I mean,
it's like,
tragic for us. It's been freaking tragic.
No, yeah. It is, but it's like,
but the visual, whole, you need the visual, right?
It's so silly. It's just like, you're just imagining, like, I don't know. It sounds like something out of South Park or something, you know, like there's a guy who like really wants to like hook up with some lesbians or something. So he's just like, I have an idea.
Yes. Seriously. Yeah.
And then like,
yes.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess. And then if a lesbian is not too fond of, the penis, shall we say, then, you know, that you shame her by calling her, by calling her names. I'm just like, wow, that's
yes, she's got genital preference. She's a fetishist. She's a genital fetishist. Oh, they tell us this. They if you go to our Facebook page, like come to LGB Fight Back's Facebook page, and you can see all the things that they lauded us. We did a post about lesbian visibility, and like a million trans activists showed up to tell us how we're so horrible and we're such bigots and all of our genital preferences and. You know, I mean, really, like, it's really abusive. This stuff. Like, come and see for yourself. Like, there's like 500 comments. Like,
I will have a look. I was going to ask actually a big question. Yeah. What's been the response?
You know, the hate mail is amusing. I find it very amusing when they call us genital fetishists and say that we're bigots because we are same sex attracted and not same gender attracted. I mean, you too, Zuby. I assume that you might have some genital fetishism going on in your own life.
I don't know.
Have genital preferences. Do you have a few?
I do have genital preferences. So it's kind of, yeah. I'll be honest.
I think that's wrong thing, Zuby, and I think you really need to examine your genital fetishism. and you know, maybe you could have that Stonewall come in and re-educate you and your staff for, to teach you how, what is correct.
Yeah. So it's that cis hetero privilege, you know? I mean, you and you with your genital preferences. It's such, so bigoted to have genital preferences.
I'm an open bigot here.
Well, so are we apparently.
do you sometimes just think like the West needs more problems? So, am I the only one who thinks this? Sometimes I'm just looking at this and I'm just like, the West needs some new problems. Cause like some of these things, I'm just like, what is going on? Have all the big battles been like fought and won and conquered? And now people are just kind of like, okay, to fight racism, we need to take Aunt Jemima off the pancake syrup bottle and remove Uncle Ben. And we need to, you know, like, there's these straight people here being straight and these lesbians here being lesbian. Like, that's not enough. Like,
those Andrew straight. Andrew needs a trans flag.
Yes. Those straight men need to start liking penises. Those lesbians also need to start liking penises. You know, it's just,
yeah.
You know, that's sports. Exactly it. Okay. We've had women's sports. That's all been running well for the past, several decades. And, you know, that was cool. You know, now women can compete in sports, et cetera. And, you know, and that's fair. No, that's not good enough. Okay. We need to start. It's weird. It's because people call it progressive, but it's genuinely regressive in so many ways. It's like you're undoing, you're just going backwards and you're undoing and corrupting certain battles that have already been won and creating new problems where there just wasn't a problem there before. Like with women's sports, there was no problem. Like no one had any problem with it. And now all of a sudden it's like, okay, we're just going to come in here and disrupt this thing and turn it into this huge ideological and socio-political battle. And we're going to pick the conservatives against the liberals and the, you know, Democrats against Republicans. And I'm just like, what? And who wants this? And how many people is this even trying to appease? Right? Like how many people are even affected by this thing? You know, can it not? And no one is saying, oh, trans people, you know, people who call themselves trans, no one is even saying, oh, they're not allowed to do sport. No one is saying that. You're just saying, okay, if you are biologically a male, then you can't compete against women. That's it. It's not even the other way around. It's not even the other way around.
These men competing in women's sports, like, just aren't very good, aren't good enough to compete with the men.
Okay, I take that personally.
Oh, well, you know, I mean, one of the things we were wondering about is when you were, you know, deadlifting, right? When you were competing and you were identifying as a woman for those 9 seconds, you're identifying as a woman for those 9 seconds. Uh-huh. You know, that actually would make you a lesbian for those 9 seconds too.
Yeah.
Just so you know.
Yeah. More. I'm aware.
Just want to be clear. Just want to be clear. This is how this works. This is how this works. So,
hey.
You know.
Hey, I'm part of your community too sometimes.
Super Welcome, sister.
I can join the movement now. Awesome. I love this. This is cool. Like you can just be anything you want. It's great. Cause I'm personally not trans. I'm gender fluid. So it's different for me. So when I deadlift, when I'm going for those records in the heat of the moment, I just feel differently. I can't really explain it. It is convenient. I'll admit that, but it works well. It works well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those magical feelings, that magical woman feeling. I've just been waiting for someone to explain it to me what that magical woman feeling is, you know? Is there a magical man feeling? I would really like to know if there's a magical man feeling.
There is, but if you want to feel it, you need to get over your genital preferences.
Ooh.
and on that note, that was not appropriate. Anyway.
We can roll with a little inappropriate. This is such a serious topic, and like, oh my god, if you like have a sense of humor, like, you know, so I mean, we're trying to have, you know, interject some humor in this whole thing, but it is really serious, it's true that who is this affecting? It's a small population, but I'll just say it's really, really affected our community, LGBT people. It's very, very much affected us, and to the parents who are dealing with this with their kids, it is very, very much affecting them. It is like tearing these families apart, you know? So, you know, and that was part of why, you know, they're being called bigots. And actually, vast majority of the parents that we've worked with and been in contact with, like, they're not anti-gay.
Yeah.
They just want their kid to grow up to be a healthy kid, a healthy young adult.
Yeah, we really want kids to grow up, the chance to grow up and enter adulthood in healthy bodies. That's really the message is don't decide these kids, you know, don't medicalize them and cut off all their choices before they're old enough to make their own.
Yeah, it sounds totally reasonable. Mm-hmm. Totally reasonable. Do you think that future generations, do you think future human beings are going to look back at this time period and just think, what the heck were they doing? Like, what was that? What were they doing there?
Aren't we already doing that? We're already starting to do that.
True.
We're already starting to do that.
True. I just think it's still early, right? It's not with some of these, so-called trans kids, et cetera. It's not going to be until later down the line, though, really. It's not going to be until a few decades where you're going to really see some of the impact of this, right? People are being rendered infertile. People are, you know, just having all sorts of experimental, you know, realistically just experimental procedures done to them. People are being not forced, but they're being pressured to make adult decisions when they're not even at the age of consent. We already know that there are people who are, you know, what they call detransitioners, who have said, oh, this is not what I wanted to do, or I was pressured into it, or I changed my mind, etc. And these are still people generally who are very young. And I don't know. It's weird. It's also weird to me because it is such a Western phenomenon, right? You look at the rest of the world. This isn't something that's, oh, if it were happening all over the world, then okay, maybe it would be harder to argue that it's like a social contagion or something that's been propagandized. But I'm like, okay, well, if this is legit, then why is this not everywhere, right? Like, we know, look, there are homosexual people everywhere. In some places it's more open and more tolerated than others, but we know, okay, like throughout history, every country in the world, there are people who are gay. Like, we just know that, right? But I mean, there was something I tweeted I think last year, and it went viral, and I said the more successful a country is, the more genders there are. So, like, this is exclusively something that's happening in certain countries, especially here in the Anglosphere, UK, Canada, USA, Australia, New Zealand. But yeah, in other places, it's just, I don't know, it's not, they're not even having these conversations.
They actually are starting to have these conversations in other countries. Yeah.
Well, I mean, what I'm saying is we're exporting this ideology and these medical practices globally. They're started, why we understand them so well is because they started in the US and they're being pumped out, both the ideology and the medical practices from here. They've gotten to the Western world first, but I've been hearing from women globally all over the world who are discussing how these ideas are infiltrating every country, some greater and lesser degree. But what you were saying about, like, what's going to happen in the future, we see a medical scandal in the making, a massive medical scandal. And one thing that I've been saying about the boys that LGBT Fight Back has been seeing, when we look at this medicalization and talk to these parents, is that in the 300 child gender clinics that currently operate in the U.S. child gender clinics, so-called, up from 50 just a few years ago, it's extremely lucrative, and that's why there's this massive proliferation. We're creating an army of boys who've been put on puberty blockers, and almost 100% of those affirmed and put on puberty blockers proceed to wrong sex manufactured hormones. And whether or not they persist in wanting to be perceived as the opposite sex or go back to wanting to be perceived as males, they are going to be left with a toddler-sized penis. These are adult men with a toddler-sized penis from being put on these drugs, whether or not they stay that course. So we're creating an army of men with toddler-sized penises that don't function the way a male penis should. And I personally think these men are going to be angry. Women are going to be angry, and men are going to be angry.
Yeah. In the West in particular, already dealing with major problems with drops in testosterone and sperm counts. I mean, yeah, I don't know. The reproductive future of the West is in trouble if certain things do not get reversed. I don't think people are really, well, I guess some people think that's good because you have the people who think, oh, the world is overpopulated anyway. I'm certainly not in that camp. But I think that a lot of people just aren't even aware of some of these things. I mean, sperm count and testosterone levels are about 50% down in the last 4 decades or something like that, which is insane. They're dropping by 1% per year. 1% per year on average, which is totally insane. And then when you couple that with what you're saying, I'm just like, you know, just when the conspiracy theorist in me starts going off and I'm like, okay, there seems to be some sort of agenda going on here. Yeah, it's crazy. But hey, I'm looking at the time. This is a really, really interesting conversation, and I've loved having both of you on. You've been so candid and honest and open, and we've talked about serious stuff, but it's also been a lot of fun. Where can people find you online, and where can people find out more about LGB Fight Back?
Yeah, so go to lgbfightback.org. We actually are reworking our website as we speak. It's in the works for a brand new website. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Spenster. You can find us on Tumblr. So yes, please follow us. Go check out these conversations we've been having. We were called faggots on Twitter, by the way, because it's perfectly okay to call LGBT people faggots in 2021. And so the post is still up.
This video is now demonetized. But yeah.
It was fine for Twitter. What do you mean? Twitter's perfectly okay with it. So, yeah. You know, but come check it out. Come see what people are saying to us to get an inside peek of what has been happening in our community and what could be coming for the super straights if y'all don't start speaking out even more. So thank you, Zuby, for having us on and for your fun, snarky comments online. We love it. We love Snark. And you know, it's so important. We, you know, we're speaking out, to say that no, actual, you know, this isn't about the LGB. Don't lump us in with the T. We aren't the same. We aren't the same. And, so yeah, if anybody needs backup, political backup, come talk to us. You know, we got your back, and you know, we love to see more people speaking out about this. So we appreciate what you've been doing.
Awesome. Thank you.
It's an honor to have spoken to the strongest woman in the UK, Zuby. Again, thank you, sister. Put some respect on my name. Sick like a ring, click and a bang. Y'all gonna remember the name. Y'all gonna remember the name.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.